Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
And it is Brett King, back with Breaking Banks this week, the first and number one global fintech show in the world. When we do this show, we normally air it out in New York. I'm actually in the studio in New York today. But joining me is Jason Hendricks. He's joining us from all the way from Chicago. Hi, Jason.
Hi there.
It's not all, I mean, it's just Chicago's not that far away, but, you know, you get the point.
And we're centrally located.
There you go. You haven't any problems with hurricanes or anything, right?
No, not until the snow starts to fly, which might be next week.
Oh, really? That early?
No, but it could happen.
It could happen. Who knows with climate change, right? So, listen, Jason and I are hosting the show together today, but we're both preparing also for Next Money coming up in Chicago next week. The entire Provoke Media family will be there. Of course, you know, that's the parent company of Breaking Banks. I'll be giving the morning keynote, Jason speaking there. JP Nichols, our often host, is also speaking there. And, of course, you know, JP has just started the new podcast, Serial Entrepreneur. And Ron Shevlin from Snark Tank will be there, and our good friend Jim Maroos will also be on stage as well. So everybody's going to be there. So if you want to check it out, go to nextmoney.org to register that. NiPay, again, a conference partner of ours, is planning their event called Retail's Drive to Digital, Tools and Tactics for October the 3rd. You can go to nipay.org events and use the code BREAKINGBANKS for a 25% discount there. What's coming up in Atlanta, Jason?
Oh, we have BAI Beacon in Atlanta on October 4th and 5th. We will have a strong contingent there, and our listeners get a discount with the code B as in Bravo 32. And we did not pick the code, but B32. And wasn't you'll there, get your there discount.
Wasn't there a band called the B32s? Or what was it?
That was the B52s, Brett.
The B52s.
And don't act like you're not old enough to remember that one.
Yeah. They had that song where they yelled out in the middle of the... No, I can't remember. Yeah, I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, we're also gearing up for, of course, our big show of the year at Money 2020 in Vegas on October 22nd to 25. We have a big booth there, a recording pod. We're going to be doing the radio show from there. We're going to be interviewing lots of speakers, and it's going to be really great. So Breaking Banks is going to be there, FinTech 5, Jason's podcast is going to be there, Serial Entrepreneur, JP Nichols is going to be there, and a few other surprises. So check it out. Look for the episodes of FinTech 5 on the Money 2020 website as we ramp up for that event as well. Now, of course, in the news, we have the continuing saga of the Equifax breach. And Jason, did you see the news that Equifax had posted on their site a link to a phishing website?
Well, I'm not sure which is actually worse. First, if you tried to register to see if you were involved in the Equifax breach, you were waiving your rights to actually go after them for giving up your information. Very curious. But then to go a step further and say, no, it's not bad enough that someone took your information from us. We're going to make it possible for them to take your information directly from you. It's just the bad is getting worse, and I can't believe that this is the state of the state.
Yeah, so if you guys want to check this out, you of course can check it out on New York Times. They have a report about this, but what actually happened was Equifax tweeted out a link, and you can monitor your credit with our free product to help prevent identity fraud. For more information, visit securityequifax2017.com. So securityequifax2017.com is actually not an Equifax site. It was a site made by an expert who created as a phishing website as an illustration of the problem. So pretty good illustration. In other news, of course, I don't know whether you saw this, but our good pal Anthony Jenkins with his startup 10X has just raised £34 million. I don't know what that is in real terms. It's probably three bitcoins, right?
Three bitcoins are just under $50 million.
Yeah.
U.S. dollars.
So he did pretty well with that. Ping An Insurance is one of the big backers there for that. So that's pretty exciting for him. We'll have to get him back on the show. But in news about robots taking our jobs, on the 20th of September, it was reported that that was yesterday, right? It was reported that Sophia. And this Sophia, if you haven't seen Sophia, is the robot, artificial intelligence, built by Hanson Robotics. Sophia has got a speaking gig at UBS's annual conference. Did you see that, Jason?
I did see that, and it actually worries me. I think that I'm very quickly on the speaking circuit about to be replaced by robots. Definitely.
This was my plan. This was my retirement plan. I was going to be on the speaking circuit, and now... I would have been telling everybody tellers are going to be the first to go with robots and AI, right? And here we go. They go after this conference speaking. I mean, that's just, now I know what it feels like to have a robot take my job anyway.
Brett, disruption is here. It is not just widely distributed yet.
Thank you to William Gibson for the inspiration for that quote, I guess, right?
Yeah, exactly. In other news along that, I think it's interesting the signal to noise in and around fintech just continues to get worse. We hear from some that the fintech revolution, in the same breath we're hearing Steve McLaughlin from FT Partners say that the game is just beginning, while others are saying the game is over and it's going back to the banks. It's, in the news, it seems like both sides are gaining more steam. It's a little bit like watching the U.S. government and how they debate things.
Here's the interesting thing is that when we look at TechFin and we look at fintech, when you look at the fastest scaling growth companies in financial services today, they are not banks. They are not incumbents. They are new entrants. So, call me a cynic, but doesn't that sort of mean that the question of whether fintech is having an effect has sort of been answered, right? I mean, just ask the Chinese banks. Yeah, 40% greater deposit risk as a result of the payments players out there, Alipay and Tencent WeChat, right?
Yeah, but one of the important things to note there, Brett, is those aren't just some startup with a couple $1 million in funding. Some of the biggest disruptors are actually some of the largest players. Very quietly, Amazon is now the largest holder of digital wallets out there. When they changed Amazon Prime, that you can actually load and store value there. They've got 66 million holders, like you and I talked about from the stage at the Mobile Payments Conference, right? That's larger than JP Morgan's entire base. And, they've got tens of thousands of merchants on the back end. Right now, I think it's Amazon.
And $185 billion in deposits just for one deposit product.
Yeah, just for one deposit product that, and I don't know that, when you hear banks say, they don't want to be a bank or they shouldn't be a bank. I don't think Amazon aspires to be a bank. They just want to conduct more commerce, and anything they have to do to take friction out, that's what they're going to do.
So this is the key, right? If you look at Uber's business, Uber launched this Uber debit card, which they did in partnership with Green Dot, right? GoBank. And, they did that so they could onboard drivers and give them a bank account at the same time, because they figured out that about 30% of the drivers in cities like Chicago and New York, they didn't have a bank account because they'd been in the yellow cab business and just getting paid with cash. Uber can't pay them in cash. They need a debit card. This was stopping them from recruiting drivers. So what they did is they just plugged into the driver sign-up process an ability for Uber drivers to open their own bank account. Now, this has been phenomenally successful for Uber. It's been very successful for the bank that they partnered with, GoBank. But here's the point. If a banker looks at that and says, Uber's getting into the banking business. Uber didn't want to be a bank. They had to fix the friction that the existing bank system had, because the existing system said, stop signing up for Uber, go down the branch, sign a piece of paper. Maybe if you're not lucky and you're not too risky, we'll give you a piece of plastic and a checkbook. And then you can go back and sign up for Uber, right? And Uber's like, that just doesn't work for us.
Yeah, well, Brett, I think you are spot on that this is why customer-driven product development is so important. And it's something historically within financial services and banking in particular, we don't do a great job of. We start actually with what our core technology providers can give us. We slap our brands on it, we hand it to the customers and say, take it or leave it. And since it's so undifferentiated, you know, consumers kind of pick one over the other, and that's about it. And I think this is a great segue into actually one of the
topic
topics
we're going to talk about today.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the topic there you go. Of today, I saw that coming.
Diversity. Oh, man.
I saw that
coming. A little too obvious.
Yeah. No, another problem we have in this industry. So, you know, of course, one of the things that you've seen as a trend recently is we've seen conference organizers that I'm involved with on the fintech side and the banking side, for example, now making a big point of trying to have diversity on stage. You know, when we go to these events, there's a lot of, you know, male bankers sitting in the audience looking back at me. But, you know, we really need to have a lot more diversity in this industry. It's one industry where it's a big problem. So we've got a couple of specialists with us today who are going to help us with that. The first is Anuska Stritz. She's the head of engineering at FinKit. She leads a team of 70 developers there, a team with only one other female member. But she's a passionate speaker on all the various reasons she thinks that are behind gender disparity in tech and in fintech as well. And we're going to delve into those with her. Do you want to introduce our other guest as well, Jason?
Sure. And so I have the benefit of sitting near Colleen Wilson on a day in and day out basis. And she is the founder and CEO of Collaborate Chicago, which is a product strategy and product marketing consulting firm that focuses on fintech. And she comes to that because she was the product marketing lead for Square's lending product and worked in strategy and product for Edward Jones. She's also very active in the women diversity in tech and fintech communities, and she is the co-founder of FTW for the Win for Fintech Women, which is an initiative of fintechs. And here's my disclosure statement, is I am the chairman of fintech, so I'm thrilled to have her as a guest to talk about her experience.
So Anuska, Colleen, welcome to the show.
Hi. Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for having us.
So maybe I'll start with Anuska. Anuska, you know, we obviously, as far as tech is growing, it's growing very rapidly. You know, it's a really exciting, you know, time to be in technology. But, you know, you being the sole female on a team like this, a leadership team, or you know, at some point in your future, you know, why is it important for us to really attack this problem at the grassroots?
I think it's a bit of an onion. I think there are a number of issues with diversity in tech, and I think it starts probably in the boardroom, and I think it filters down then through to the grassroots, through to universities and schools and parenting, and we could probably get into all of that kind of stuff. But fundamentally, I think on a board and on a leadership team within an organization, I think diversity, and not just gender diversity, kind of diversity more generally, when you've got a kind of homogeneous set of middle-aged white men on a board, you're all going to kind of think, not necessarily in the same way, but the law of averages states that you've probably got more chance of having more diversity with a more heterogeneous group of people. And I think what that will give you is, you know, a smarter bunch of people. And in fact, there's a growing body of evidence now that shows that more heterogeneous, diverse groups of leaders actually are able to innovate more and better and actually have a fundamental impact on the bottom line.
What do you think drives that? Because it's interesting to observe that, you know, is it correlation versus causation? But I'd love to hear from the two of you, what do you think those drivers are, that if it is a more heterogeneous management team, why do those teams perform better?
Well, I think, you know, I think it's mainly down to the fact that people who work with people who are like each other, people find it easy, right? It's comfortable. And so therefore you don't question each other so much. And I think when you're in a group of people where it's not particularly comfortable necessarily, and you are kind of trying to think more about how that person's thinking, it kind of surfaces questions, and you start challenging the norm, and you start challenging how things are supposed to be done, and that drives innovation.
Colleen, what is your... Go ahead, Brett.
Colleen can go first.
Sorry? Jason, were you going to ask a follow-up question?
No, I was going to say, what are your thoughts there?
So I really, to build upon what Anuska was talking about, I do think that I don't know if it is the chicken or the egg and what comes first or second, but in my experience, working within diverse teams, and you can think of it in diversity in any way and really more so inclusive thinking of really challenging your own assumptions. And when it comes to product development and specifically innovation, where I feel like fintech and financial services are really at a pivotal point where what got you here is not going to get you to the next level. And it comes down to challenging those base assumptions. And it's harder to challenge things when you're really reaffirming one another's thoughts. And that's what tends to happen, I think, in undiverse teams. And so one of the things I've noticed in roles that I've been in more diverse teams is we do have uncomfortable conversations. We do fight at times. There are times where people get passionate and we debate and we question. But that's really where it's not the easiest path, but it tends to yield the best results when it comes, especially to product market fit.
Yeah, I sit on a board that's very well balanced in terms of diversity. It's the board for the Center for Financial Services Innovation. I don't know why I'm having trouble talking today, Jason, but I am. Maybe I haven't had enough coffee. But the board for CFSI, and Jen Tesher is the CEO out there, and she's done a phenomenal job of putting together a really great mix of people on the board. It's diverse ethnically as well as it is in terms of gender, and it produces really interesting conversation interactions, far more than if it was a room full of middle-aged fat white guys, as someone said before, I think. But does it just take a good leader to be able to implement this diversity, you know, at a board level and then down the chain?
I think it's absolutely essential that the exec team are showing a good example across the business. And there's a number of ways that they can do that. They can do that by the people they recruit into their board, but also by the policies that they set throughout the organization. Being able to set good examples, for example, around work-life balance, right? And being able to show that it's okay to take time off work and it's okay to take parental leave, for example, and in that policy setting. So it's not just about putting the right people and the diverse people on that board. It's about living it and showing it through example.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, Colleen. With the parental leave, I had to grab that one as a new father, and always having been supportive of women in the organizations I work for of taking the leave, but setting a horrible example myself. I'm just seeing the ripple effect of that now as you have a daughter and the time off. That it isn't just about the policy; it's actually the real example you set.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I read a statistic recently. It's unbelievable that only 10% of guys in America actually get paid paternity leave at all. And then most of those don't actually take all of that because there's a kind of stigma attached to it around not being able to, losing faith or looking unprofessional or unmotivated if they take all of that leave. And actually, if we're going to normalize the fact that, women are not necessarily the primary caregivers, and we want to normalize that, then we need to show that actually it's okay for guys to take this leave. And in fact, we should encourage it. And what's really positive are companies like Facebook, for example, have actually implemented parental leave policies. It's not paternity or maternity. It's parental leave, and everybody gets, I think it's about 4 months off. And actually, Mark Zuckerberg set an excellent example when he took 2 months off himself after the birth of his own daughter. And that's a really great example of how you can lead by example.
I'd take leave all the time if someone would pay me for it.
Well, I think that that's a big contributing factor. And when I was out, it's interesting. So being from the Midwest and then going out to California and seeing, obviously the lifestyle is a bit different, but when I was at Square, I was so pleasantly surprised to see how many parents, how many male parents took leave and for the full 4 months to be with their family and help raise their child. And it was something that I found incredibly, incredibly hope-filling. One of the examples was when I was on my team there, one of our engineering leads, who is incredibly respected, actually helped build the original payment rails for Square. He and his wife had their first child, and he was gone for 4 months. And he's like, you know, I'm not going to be on. I'm trying to keep a small human alive. And it was a fantastic experience. Yeah, it was great. And it really gave me a lot of hope. And even being back in the Midwest, some of the companies are there, some of them are not. But it's been interesting to see as friends of mine start families and people who I work with start families, the more involved that the father figure in the relationship actually takes in being there from the beginning and taking that time and investing it in the family.
So let me ask you guys a question. You know, if I want to be a role model or an ally, you know, to my female friends and give them more props and give them more access, you know, what are some mistakes I make on a daily basis? You know, not me personally, but you know, the your male friends that are willing to work on this, and what could I do better?
I think for me, the biggest one, and it's completely well-meaning, is I quite often get asked, I don't know how you do it, Anushka. How do you manage this amazing career and a family? It's like, you know, right. And it's kind of, well, you know, it's a really well-meaning question, and it's kind of, why don't you ask me about the latest thing I learned? What was the latest book I read? What was, you know, why right. Why am I defined by my family and the role that I have as a caregiver for that? I'm, you know, I'm more than my daughter's mum and my husband's wife. And that's one of the biggest, you know, things I come across almost, well, not daily, but quite often.
Okay. Colleen?
I think that that's so spot on. I remember when I was lucky enough to be at Square throughout the journey to being a public company, and there was a team of three that were on the road that were really talking with the analysts and the investment banks, and it was Jack Dorsey, Sarah Fryer, who's our CFO, and then Francois Brouwer, who at the time was the head of business. And we would do these meetings every other Friday, the entire company in San Francisco. We would live stream them to our other offices, and we would just kind of talk about the questions that were being asked. And I remember Sarah and Francois making a joke about this, that on the road show, someone had asked them, like, oh, is it hard being away from your kids, or asking them about work-life balance? And I actually think it was Jack who asked one of them about it, or about, like, I don't know how you do it all. And Sarah just very... very directly, and with, she's one of the classiest women I know, kind of made a joke of it, of saying, it's interesting that you're asking me that question, Jack. Why am I not asking you a similar question, or what have you? And how that's the first question that she often gets asked, or even things like how she stays in shape. And oftentimes, those things really aren't as relevant versus your ability to actually perform and do your job. And I think that where the allies that I have, and I'm lucky enough to have several and several mentors that are male, I kind of think of it like customer decision journey. It starts with awareness. It starts with conversation. I think a lot of the boiler situation that we're in could probably be prevented with much more open communication and dialogue, and yep. Things of saying, you know, how do we start this conversation? Because oftentimes much of this is unconscious.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great point. So how do you start the dialogue? Because, you know, certainly someone like Jack is used to taking things direct, but, you know, yeah. Is your run-of-the-mill, overweight, white guy, you know, going to take direct feedback like that? So how do we get the
Why
dialogue going?
Why do I feel
going?
Like you're talking about me, Jason?
Well, you're the one who said, Jason, I can't believe you're even managing to stay in shape with a newborn, Brett. So, you know, you started it.
I think it's a manifestation I resemble that of culture. Comment. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I think it's a manifestation of culture. I think that it starts with creating a cadence of open communication and transparency and saying, just like so many times in organizations that I've worked in, feedback is very top down. It's not as often bottoms up. And so I think number one, it starts with being a leader and setting the tone for an organization of saying, we value two-way feedback. We value open communication. We value open dialogue. And then I think it manifests from there. If I feel comfortable saying, hey, you know what, Jason, when we were having this conversation, there was something I just wanted to make you aware of. And actually just starting by pointing it out, not putting blame on, not saying that you meant to say it this way, because oftentimes the intention is not there. It's just pointing out those small nuances over time, like you keep asking me to take notes, or I keep getting interrupted, or what have you, and making the other person aware of it. But it starts with culture, in my opinion.
How does that work with the recent Google memo, the infamous Google memo, he wanted the chap who wrote quite offensive things in that memo, he wanted to speak and he wanted to talk openly. It's a two-way street, right? And so how do we, if we're going to encourage, us to be able to communicate to guys, the kind of things and the behaviors that we like from, would expect from them, how does it work the other way around? And how do we provide a safe forum where men can kind of feed back to us about, because I think it's absolutely critical that they're able and to feel that they can speak openly about things that are worrying them as well. I do feel it's a two-way mm-hmm. street.
I 100% agree, because I feel like if it becomes just a one-way dialogue, that's not a dialogue. And then I think the other counterpart, whoever's on the receiving end, feels very defensive and they feel very attacked. And that's not collaborative. What happens is you probably tend to distance yourself then from that other person. And that's exactly what we're trying to prevent, I think, in those types
Absolutely.
Of situations.
Well, and
I don't know whether you guys saw this, but James Damore, the guy who wrote that Google memo, he's in huge trouble right now. Did you see he tweeted out a poll on Twitter about the cool titles that the KKK use? Mm. It's pretty disastrous,
treat,
actually. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe that is not the best example of someone trying to speak his mind, but I do think that, you know, it really is important to tease that out, because I think that, you know, my observation, and I know Colleen, you and our friend who's a CEO in the fintech space, and I had this conversation a couple weeks ago. So many women actually, because they realize, you know, the man wasn't doing it intentionally and this was not a way of, you know, keep the woman down, and they don't want to impact that productive working relationship they have, is they tend to be silent or develop coping mechanisms around it, because, you know, they don't want to offend or jeopardize that. So, you know, maybe one of the things we can keep unpacking here is, how do you safely go to a man without offending him and making it defensive? You know, because that's one of my challenges. My wife says it all the time. She tries to give me feedback and my immediate response can be a defensive one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and that's okay. I think it's just, if it's uncomfortable, it doesn't mean we shouldn't talk about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we need to build relationships, and there are some fairly uncomfortable things that we do need to talk about. You know, some of the outputs of that memo were very uncomfortable. And I think the danger of not talking about them, though, is that the resentment that was clearly there will just get kicked into the weeds and just fester. And that's even more dangerous, isn't it? And so I think, yes, it's uncomfortable, but I think we have to kind of just get on with it, and we have to have these conversations.
Absolutely.
We have to have the conversations, and I think it's actually one of the important roles that men have to play, because it is entirely different, and this was the conversation Colleen, John, and I were having. If I do something that is completely boneheaded, which I am prone to doing, I am likely to be less defensive if a male peer comes to me as an observation. So it's not putting Colleen as an example in that uncomfortable position of saying, Jason, you're being an idiot. Did you see Colleen's face, or do you realize you always make Colleen take the notes? Yeah. You're propagating a bias.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, Jason. Hey, listen, guys, I want to go to a quick break. And then after we come back from the break, you know, let's sort of try and get a bit of a picture of the scale of the problem, you know, what percentage of the industry is women, you know, what about VC funding, you know, let's sort of try and put some numbers behind this so people understand that this is a real issue. But before that, we need to have a quick break. So stay with us. We'll be right back after these words from our very generous sponsors.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
What do financial services of the future look like? Invisible yet ubiquitous, blended into our lives like air, gravity, this podcast. Temenos has specialized for 20 years in creating the best financial technology for thousands of financial institutions worldwide. Our open fintech marketplace allows millions of people to experience money in exciting new ways. Join the most vibrant financial services ecosystem in the world. Temenos, we make the money go round.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag #BreakingBanks. Now, back to the program.
You are back with Brett King and Jason Henricks on Breaking Banks. Now, before we get back to talking about fintech, I want to take a quick moment to tell you about eFinancialCareers.com, one of the supporters of the show. They're the world's leading career site for financial service professionals for over 15 years. eFinancialCareers.com partners with leading financial and fintech firms, so your resume is seen by all the top companies and recruiters in the US and abroad. Now, as we all know, financial services is a very dynamic, ever-changing industry, and eFinancial Careers provides valuable resources from helpful career coaching to interview strategies and tools that keep you up to speed and well-informed with what's happening now in the industry and what it means for your career. Registration's free for financial professionals. Make sure you take advantage of all the resources they have to offer. So check them out, eFinancialCareers.com. Okay, so back to what we're talking about before the break in terms of diversity. Yeah, maybe, ladies, can I get you to maybe quantify the scale of this problem? You know, why is this such an issue today?
I think the major issue is that if you look in the UK, only about 17% of roles are filled by women in tech. I think the US is actually faring a little bit better with around 25%. And, you know, if we think back to, I think, the early 90s, this is more like kind of 35, 36%. So it's getting worse. It's not getting better. And I think at the moment, the growth in tech industries is massively outstripping the growth of other kind of non-digital industries. And we are looking at a massive increase in tech roles over the coming years. I read something recently that kind of suggested there'd be as many as, I think, 1.4 million new roles in tech created by 2020, which is quite staggering. And, you know, if we carry on like this, you know, the graduates that are being produced from US universities alone are only going to be enough to kind of fill around a third of those vacancies.
Right.
And it's, you know, so, you know, we can take the kind of ideological discussions about, you know, the social right, the benefits of having more diversity in tech. It's actually a numbers problem. If we've got any hope of remaining on the leading edge of kind of innovation and competitive, we have to get more women into technology.
Well, given the scale of the growth of the tech sector, if we only rely on males, I mean, we don't have enough people to fill those jobs right now, right? So if we only rely on males coming through university, we're going to be even worse shape. We have to have girls getting into coding and these areas. It's really critical.
Absolutely. That's why I quite like this argument. It's a kind of bottom line argument. You take away the, all the ideological stuff. It's just actually that's talk about the dollar here. We are going to start failing to innovate and failing to meet our consumers' demands. And if we don't do it, somebody else will.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Colleen?
Well, I think also when you look at the market, especially in financial services and financial technology, at least in the United States, I think the last statistic I looked at was over 52% of the wealth in the United States is held by a woman, and that number is only growing. And also, a majority of the household financial decisions and a growing number of the business financial decisions are made by a woman. And so in order to really lock that product market fit, there needs to be diverse perspective and thinking of all of those use cases and those users. And that's another one of the big reasons, especially from like the product side, that I see as such a need for women in more technical roles and making these decisions about the strategy and the products that we're building today.
So this is really acute problem, not just in hiring staff, but of course in the foundation of companies themselves. We need strong companies led by strong women as well. And if you look just in the U.S. in the VC market, VCs invested $58 billion last year in 2016 in male founders, and just $1.46 billion in female founders. So this is a massive disparity. Or put in other numbers, almost 6,000 male-funded companies got VC funding, just 359 companies with female founders. This is just a crazy statistic, given that we're essentially split 50-50 or 51-49 in terms of gender split in the in population stakes. It looks like maybe we don't just need to start at the boardroom. Maybe we need to start with, encouraging female entrepreneurship as well and getting them funding sources.
Well, and one thing that comes to mind is I wonder even if it starts so much younger than that in how girls are raised and the hobbies that they have and the schooling. And there's an organization here in Chicago that I'm involved with called ARA, which stands for Attract, Retain, and Advance Women in Technology. And they do a survey. This is the second year they've done it with a group here in Chicago called Harvey Nash. And they haven't released the official survey results, but I had a sneak peek because I'm one of their partners. And one of the statistics in there is that most male, either engineers or men who identify IT or technology as their career path, find that in high school, usually between their freshman and sophomore year. Most women don't consider a career in technology until their first job. And so to me, Anuska, I'd love to hear your perspective on this. To me, it absolutely rings true. I went into business, and then I didn't even know what a product manager was until I was about 3 or 4 years into my first job. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I want to go work with engineers. I want to make stuff all day long. But that just wasn't the environment that I was brought up with, and I don't think I'm that unique.
No, and the nub of it comes down to role models, okay? And so, if you look out there are tons of male role models. But in terms of female role models, you probably count them on one hand. And and at the moment, you've got Sheryl Sandberg, for example. She's amazing and inspirational, but not everybody's going to be the COO of Facebook, right? And so it's kind of, I think it's a more grassroots type of role model that we need to provide to these two girls in school. If you ask a school kid, a 7-year-old school kid, to draw me an engineer, draw me a picture of an engineer, I bet nine out of ten kids will draw a man. Okay, so they're going through school thinking that this is a man's job.
A fat bald man.
Yeah, with shiny shoes. Shiny shoes.
Or some kind of geek hoodie, glass, bespeckled, you know, teenager drinking Coke. But it's, you know, it's that kind of, you know, it's a guy's job, okay? And that's what they're going to draw. If they, you know, you ask them to draw a nurse or a dancer, they'll probably draw a woman, right? It's that kind of thing. Unless it's my daughter and she'll probably draw a man because she likes Dancing with the Stars and, she, you know, so she's got some favorites there.
I draw a robot. Sorry.
But it's that kind of thing. And so it's all very well to have these high profile role models out there, but I think it's actually more important to get real on the ground role models, people like myself, women who are actually coding and doing product development and design, and get them out into schools and say, look, girls, you know, what's your preconception of an engineer? Well, this is an engineer and it's a woman, you know, and actually get that out there and talk to girls about that, you know, it is a viable and really cool career. I think it's an amazing career. I've had such a great time over the last 20 years. And I'm just really passionate about getting that out there. So, you know, we need more of that.
Anushka, something I hadn't thought about until you just said this is it's not just important for the girls to see that here is a female who is an engineer. It's important for the boys to see that as well. Like they need, you need to break it early.
Yeah, it's more important. And I think it's, we've got these kind of fixed ideas of, you know, boys and girls, you know, babies when they come out, they don't have any preconceptions about what boy jobs are and girl jobs are. They have, you know, different reproductive organs, you know, and that's about it. But through society, we kind of, you know, we treat boys and girls differently. And we try really hard, you know, to be a bit more gender blind about things, and it is getting better. But at the end of the day, you know, you only have to go into Toys R Us if it's still there. And, you know, there's a blue aisle and a pink aisle. You know, it might not ostensibly say boys and girls, but it's pretty damn clear which are the boys' toys and which are the girls' toys. You know, boys traditionally, you know, they play with construction toys and Lego, and girls play with, you know, dolls and fluffy toys. And actually, what we need to do is kind of make it acceptable and okay for boys and girls to play with the same toys and accept that there's actually, people talk about a gender spectrum. I actually think it's more complex than that, because if you have a gender spectrum, then you're kind of sliding a marker, you know, more towards being more male or more to being more female. I prefer to think of it as a gender matrix. And so, you know, you can kind of pick and choose various traits based on what works for you. And so if I look at my 10-year-old daughter, she likes to play with Lego and play Minecraft and play on her iPad. She does mountain biking and she rock climbs like a girl. She's badass.
She sounds like she rocks. Yeah.
She's awesome. But also, she likes pink and she loves to wear dresses and sparkles.
Is she with you now?
She's not. No, she's
so I was going to get her to say hello on the radio. She would have got a kick out of that.
but she's a great example of this kind of gender matrix, right? Where she's kind of finding her role in place, role in the world, and the behaviours and the traits that she finds work for her. And I think by using kind of averages, like, you know, you are male, you are female, therefore we expect males to exhibit these traits and females to exhibit these traits, actually it's incredibly unhelpful. And it kind of just builds these, you know, it's like death by a thousand cuts. You know, just like little, you know, insidious things that kind of build your way slowly as you go through your early parenting into junior school, into high school. And by the time you get into high school, it's fixed, you know. And we've proven that women, they actually have a relatively high take-up of kind of STEM courses right through to high school, and then they start dropping it. And what we're seeing is that they're dropping it because they're in with a bunch of guys who have been, you know, throughout their entire life, they've been told, you know, man up, don't cry, don't run like a girl. Anything girly is, you know, seen as a negative attribute. And therefore, girls then go into this environment and they find they don't have, you know, they're lacking in confidence and they basically fall away. And so what we have to do is to build an environment where, you know, like to do something like a girl is badass, and to do and actually there's nothing that a girl can't do that a boy can, or the other way around.
Well, one of the most important takeaways there is the point of diversity isn't to just have more diversity of the genitalia, but it's actually of the other attributes. If we just have more women in leadership positions, but they get there because they act more like men, that defeats the entire purpose mm-hmm. here.
Absolutely.
And actually propagates the wrong stereotype.
Exactly.
Colleen, I'm wondering, you know, someone who's also worked through this and looking back at your career, are there coping mechanisms where you found you just, you know, naturally take on or let certain things go, that now that you look back and you are a role model for a lot of young women, that you would turn to the younger Colleen self and say, you know what, you shouldn't act like that. You should be proud to mm-hmm. be this.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't think I'm unique in that. I think growing up in the finance world, I started working in finance when I was about 20 years old. And I think that some of the coping mechanisms that I saw was, number one, ignore it. Because if you point it out, it's uncomfortable. You don't want to be labeled as a bitch. You don't want to be seen as someone who just complains and whines. Because when you start to point things out, especially I think when you're a young female and maybe these discussions haven't been had because culturally the organization just isn't there yet, it can come across as aggressive and people retaliate against that. And it makes you very uncomfortable and very unwilling to speak up. I think the other way that I coped, other than just ignoring it, was I almost would try to be one of the guys. And I had this, like, this reflection point, and it wasn't until I was a manager myself where there were some jokes being made or just comments being made, and I think it was they were describing a woman. They're like, oh, is she cute? Oh, yeah, she's cute. And I was like, what the F does that have to do with her role? Like, what does that have to do at all with her ability to be the best XYZ that she is? It has nothing to do with it. And it was, at that point, I didn't say anything. Instead, I just kind of laughed and was like, whatever, guys, and just kept going on. Yeah. But I missed a critical opportunity to be like, ooh, that right there, like, interesting that you would describe her that way. I missed that opportunity.
Yeah, and I that really resonates with me because I've had a number of, you know, encounters in the. I'd like to go back to the younger me and say, mm-hmm. don't do that. You know, call
it's
that
okay
out.
It's okay to disagree because, yes.
Yeah.
I feel the same way about all kinds of things, about things like that, and just saying, it's okay to disagree. And even if people disagree with you, it's okay. Your self-worth isn't in jeopardy. You don't need to be best friends with everybody, and it's okay to have opinions different than other people's. That's fine.
So I want to talk specifically about some, you know, technology aspects. You know, Anushka, particularly for you, because you lead a team of developers, and I assume you're a byte ripper yourself. You've coded, right?
Not as much as I would like to these days, but yeah, I still dabble.
Yeah, I think the last code I touched in Angular was 95, so yeah. So I hear you. I'm a reformed programmer myself. But, you know, in terms of balanced development teams, and, you know, you're not in one right now, it doesn't look like, but, you know, in terms of balanced development teams with more female coders, do you see any artifacts of that diversity come out in the way those teams work together?
I think it's kind of going back to the stuff we were talking about before around just idea generation. But also what I find is that teams collaborate differently when they are more diverse like that. So they, you know, you end up with slightly different approaches to problem solving. And so, you know, you might get you might get this bunch of homogeneous guys who are kind of attacking a problem like a rat in a trap. And then somebody might come along and just have a slightly different point of view, a slightly different approach, maybe a less hammer and nut approach. And they go, I take a step back. And so, yeah, we definitely do see it. And I have worked in much more diverse environments where I've actually seen that happen. It's kind of going back to that, you know, moving away from people, you know, feeling comfortable with people that they like and that they feel the same as, and just mixing it up a bit.
So, Colleen, maybe I'll ask you a follow-up to that. Is, you know, how do we do the PR here that makes that known? You get better, more diversity gives you better, get better results, more diverse capabilities.
I think it's really more about continuing the conversation around innovation and excellence. And there's some studies around there. I think McKinsey had one a couple of years ago, and I looked it up before I walked in here, and it was something around where the top companies when it came to gender diversity and also racial diversity outperformed these other teams by about 35%, and they had like 15 times the sales revenue. And so I think it's really more about making those things known. And I think even companies can backtest this. They can look at the products that they have and who's working on things like this, and really seeing, like, it comes down to the numbers. It comes down in speed to fit. It comes down to adoption and knowing all these different use cases. But I think it's the facts. I think that's as simple as that.
And I love that it's launches them. Go ahead, Anushka.
No, I was just going to say, another thing that I see in more diverse teams where you don't have that kind of, you know, familiarity is that there's a little bit more scrutiny around what the team members are doing. And so there's not just that acceptance of everything. And so everything just gets slightly more scrutinized and slightly more looked at. And so more questions get asked. That's a definite. And obviously from that, you get better quality, right?
You know, what would be interesting is to look at retention of employees on diverse teams. I don't know if anyone's ever looked at that, but like employee satisfaction and retention of people who are on teams like that. I haven't seen any research done around that, but I think I would be really interested to see that.
So yeah, listen, guys, we've got about 4 minutes left. So, to sort of wrap this up, if I've got a company today, if I'm the CEO of a business, whether I'm a man or a woman, what's the first thing that you would recommend that I do to start working on fixing this problem?
So it goes back to, you need to set a really good example yourself. You need to look at getting mentoring programs in place. They do have an impact, and they do work. Groups of women who have, if women are a minority in a workplace, and in some of these workplaces you're looking at fewer than 10% of the women, 10% of the workforce being a woman. And so putting support networks in place and mentoring to kind of put those that support in place for women is really, really important. And then also just have a think about unconscious bias, right? It is there. We all do it unconsciously, and so that kind of doing things like through recruitment, just take the names off the CVs, right? Just things like that that can really make a difference in small changes that can really help.
And what
I would agree. I would agree with that. I think just noticing, even like the pronouns you use, like I'm going to go talk to the guys over at Morgan Stanley. Notice the pronouns. Notice, get super curious, just like how if you were doing any type of observational research or like product discovery or customer development, like get super curious. Notice how the women in the room are reacting. Notice how the men in the room are reacting. And ask why. And I think that it starts with the companies that I've loved working with and I've loved working for, there's always that champion of someone saying, I really do believe that this is important. This is something that's a goal for me. It's a value that I really want to hang my hat on. It's something I truly believe is the best for our environment and the best for the type of leader that I want to be. Make it known. Make it known and ask for help. Just like if I were in a new role and I would ask for male allies and sponsors and mentors, do the same thing with women that you trust in your network and say, this is something that I'm really working on, and help be my partner, help mentor me, help make me. People need to be enabled. And so just ask for help and get curious.
Excellent. So, Anushka, how can we follow you? What social media channels are you on, or how do we keep up with what you're doing?
I am on Twitter at Anushka Streets.
Fantastic. We'll tweet that out.
Yeah.
Right. And Colleen, yourself?
The best way to find me is on LinkedIn, actually, Colleen Spates Wilson.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for joining the show today and adding some diversity to the mix today for the Breaking Banks.
And thanks for the education as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So just before we finish up, some fun news. Authorities in Switzerland have found pipes near Geneva getting clogged near banks and several restaurants. On investigation, they found that toilets near a bank vault were stuffed with 500 euro bills that had been chopped up with scissors. So literally, someone is flushing money down the toilet in Switzerland. That's how well they're doing. Of course, the 500 euro note is the nickname for the 500 euro note was called the Bin Laden. Do you know why, Jason?
I have no idea, Brett.
Because everyone knew they existed, but they're so hard to find.
Oh.
Anyway. But that's it for the show today. Some weird news to finish off. Thanks for listening to Breaking Banks. Don't forget to go to iTunes, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating there. Helps other people find the show. And if you have other suggestions, then tweet us out for the show. Send us a message on Facebook or Twitter. We love to get that feedback and incorporate it into what we're doing in the future. So check it out. And Jason, thanks again for co-hosting with us.
Pleasure.
Go to BreakingBanks.com and check out our previous episodes as well if you want to see what's on the back catalog. Thanks again, guys. I'm Brett King, and I'll see you again next week.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.